Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I'm joined by my buddy Ben Baldwin, as I am, you know, once every 4, 5, 6 months. I think that Ben is basically one of the smartest NFL data people that exists anywhere on the internet. You know, I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of people who love Aaron Rodgers who would disagree with me, but I really enjoy talking to Ben, and I kind of thought this would be a great time after we've had a month of football to just sort of discuss some of the big storylines. Obviously, we have the Aaron Rodgers resurgence. We have all of the good teams being concentrated in the AFC. So just sort of a temperature check on what the NFL has been like for a month. You know, things we are going to expect to continue, things that we don't think will continue, and and also the beginning of the Let Russ Cook story, which Ben, as a Seahawks fan, is very close to. So hope that you guys enjoy the episode, and if you want to support the show, you can get bonus episodes on Patreon.com/TakeCast, and you can also just leave a rating or review on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. That is very useful and helpful as well. Let's get into the show. All right, everyone, welcoming back to the program for the fifth or sixth time, one of my absolute favorite people to talk to, someone who is so intelligent that I actually listened to what they have to say, and that's certainly not true of all that many people. Ben Baldwin, how are we doing, buddy? How are we feeling?
Great. Thanks for having me back on. I've been listening to the show since when it very first started, which is now probably a long time ago, so always happy to hop back on.
Yeah, a startlingly long time ago to think about. In fact, so long ago that I believe when we started this podcast, the idea of even letting Russ cook hadn't even been born yet. It was just a latent frustration from Seattle Seahawks fans. I don't actually think back in 2017 that it was even a thing. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. When did the Let Russ Cook movement begin, Ben?
No, you're right. It wasn't quite articulated into words in 2017, but the big frustration that season was they got behind in a lot of games and then finally unleashed Wilson in the end of these games, and they had all these huge comebacks or attempted comebacks, and then fell short in a lot of them and then ended up missing the playoffs. And then in 2018, they basically ran all the time, had that playoff loss in Dallas that we all remember where Wilson barely got to do anything, and then Let Russ Cook was kind of born out of the frustration of that playoff game and then what happened last year too.
So how does it feel to see Russ cooking as someone who loves football, as someone who loves Russell Wilson, as someone who loves the Seattle Seahawks? What is it like to watch Russ cook?
Yeah, so there's a lot of elements of this, and I know people hate like victory lapping and doing all that stuff on Twitter, but I just haven't been able to help myself on this one.
Buddy, this is the TakeCast. We can take as many victory laps as we want.
Okay, so first of all, I just had a piece on this that came out today on The Athletic, so if anyone's interested, make sure you check that out. But so piece number one is a lot of people have tried to diminish Russell Wilson over the course of his career by saying he doesn't pass the ball very much and he would struggle in a high passing offense, and therefore he's not kind of on the same footing as the other kind of elite quarterbacks that we see. Another thing people say is like the Seahawks coaching staff knows what they're doing and they're keeping his pass attempts low for a reason, and like they're smarter than you, blah, 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 and like all this stuff going on. So seeing Russell Wilson do this and be amazing while doing this is just like, there's so many reasons that it's been incredible to watch. And I hope I'm not jinxing everything by taking a victory lap 4 weeks into the season, but I mean, there's been such a just incredible pushback to the idea that the Seahawks should be leading on Wilson more, that watching them do it and them succeed doing it is just, it's been so much fun so far.
What is it that you think finally changed Pete Carroll's mind? Because we're talking about what Pete Carroll is. He's literally in his 70s, right? Pete Carroll is...
He's 69.
He's 69. So this is, we're talking about the actual oldest coach in professional football. Like, what is it that changed him after literally all of these years to change his stripes? Like, this would be like your granddad getting divorced from your grandma, turning into an all vegan diet and like meditating for 3 hours a day. Like, this is like completely unexpected stuff.
Yeah, that's the question, right? So after last season, I basically wrote a piece saying like, yeah, Pete Carroll has all these benefits that he brings to the Seahawks, like stability, and he's good at locker room building and culture building and all these things, but I'm ready to be done with Pete Carroll and let Russell Wilson have a different coach and the Seahawks have a new coach in 2020. So I thought there was a 0% chance that Pete Carroll would change, because he had been doing the same thing for so long. And this is kind of his philosophy of football, was that you run the ball a lot, you don't turn the ball over, you don't put your defense in a bad position, and that's how you won football games. And Pete Carroll's won a lot of football games, so why would he ever change? And then all of a sudden, they come out this season passing the ball all over the place. So this will never happen, but I would love to have a conversation with Pete Carroll about like what finally got him to change his mind, because that would be really interesting.
My guess from the outside is Russell Wilson said, "This is bullshit, man. Like, what are we doing here? Like, I am so good. I just do everything so well. We got to pass the ball more. Like, this is absurd to be turning our team over to Chris Carson when I am so good and I can make good things happen literally all the time."
Yeah. So I think one plausible explanation is that your Chiefs should get credit for this, because everyone's watching the playoffs. Everybody's seeing the weapons that the Chiefs put around Mahomes. They're the pass happiest team in the league every year that Mahomes has been the starter. And obviously they won the Super Bowl and everybody's watching the Super Bowl. So how can you be Russell Wilson and watch what Mahomes is doing and watch what the Chiefs are doing around Mahomes and not say, I want to do that? Because Russell Wilson he's a great athlete. He's a professional athlete. He has to think in his head, I'm every bit as good as Patrick Mahomes. And not everyone's going to agree with that, but I'm sure that's Wilson's mindset. And if he sees Mahomes doing all those things, then why wouldn't Wilson think that he could do those things as well if he had kind of the support structure that
So I definitely agree that the Chiefs are having this influence all over the league. Like, if we just look at the league right now through 4 weeks and then we compare it to last season, I think they are having that impact. I also think that the how bad all the defenses are is having an impact on it. Like, this was actually very commonly floated out in the preseason, Ben, amongst like fantasy football people. I don't know how much it was thrown out there in like serious football Twitter, but if we look back at 2011, which was when we had the last time of like shortened training camps and everything, basically the defenses were terrible and the offenses were way ahead. This was when we had Eli Manning throwing for 5,000 yards, Matt Stafford threw, I think, 727 times. And that's basically happening. Like, that is happening in the NFL that we are seeing right now. I'm actually looking at Pro Football Reference right now, and through four games, there are 13 teams who have gained 1,500 yards or more. Like, that's crazy. That is absurd.
Yep. Yeah, there's definitely, I think, some aspect of, like, maybe it's easier for offenses to prepare and they're ahead of defenses. Maybe it's easier for offenses to play when there's not as much noise in stadiums. And maybe we could have seen that stuff coming ahead of time. But then there's one thing that no one could have predicted, which is the NFL deciding not to call holding penalties anymore.
Yes. And
that also...
So big.
affects drives. If you get a holding called on you, it's very hard to come back from that in a drive. And if you just all of a sudden stop holding, then there's both the impact of those penalties not directly harming drives, but also encouraging offensive linemen to perhaps be more aggressive with where they're placing their hands on defenders and giving them that extra advantage. So all of that together has really made for an offense.
Which, by the way, I love. Like, who wants to watch?
Oh, yeah.
Who wants to watch a bunch of 17 to 10 games? Like, I don't care. I don't care who you are. Like, you're lying to yourself. If you're one of these people, probably like a Tennessee Titans fan, that's like, you know what? I don't like this at all. Like, I want to see some good defensive battles. Like, I just got to respectfully disagree. Like, that sounds terrible. No one wants that.
I think last week's Jets Broncos game was a great example of that. I think you could imagine that game being played a couple of years ago and it being like a 13-7 game and everyone just turning it off after the first quarter or something. But it was actually like they're not good teams, but it was still an entertaining game because offenses can actually do something even when quarterback play isn't great. So yeah, I'm with you that it's so much more fun to watch.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So another thing though, that you actually bring up here, right? We just talk about the Kansas City Chiefs maybe being this, this impetus for teams to be throwing more, and they're not doing that themselves, right? This Clyde Edwards-Helaire pick, not only does it look like a waste of a first round pick, but I was actually doing a little bit of looking today. So the Kansas City Chiefs are third in the NFL in expected points gained on offense, right? So they're right behind the Bills and then way behind the Packers, who we are going to talk about. Of those 66 points, they have gained 66.93 of them via passing the ball, and they have gained 0.6 of them via rushing the ball. Like, this Clyde Edwards-Helaire stuff, it is legit bumming me out, man. Like, it just looks like – because they now, Ben, have become a run-run-pass team. And just the difference is Mahomes is – like, if you were going to pick one quarterback ever – to have on 3rd and 8, you'd pick Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, the pick is a little bit concerning about like the team's view of how they think they win. But I'll push back a little bit and say that. So I was just looking at which teams run the most on 2nd and long, and the Chiefs. This is great podcasting here. So the Chiefs are number 6 in pass rate on 2nd and long. So they're not like. They're not going full pre-2020 Seahawks or anything like that, but they're still probably running the ball more than is optimal given that they have Mahomes. And even the Edwards-Helaire thing is like everyone thought before the season he was just going to eat because he was in that amazing offense, and no matter what.
Certainly, I thought that. I mean, I am like very heavily invested in Clyde Edwards-Helaire in fantasy football, and this is not what I imagined from him at all.
Yeah, so it's kind of surprising. Like, I thought they could just plug in anybody, like we've seen in the past with Damian Williams being the best example, and he just hasn't really been that guy, and they should probably be leaving more than they are already.
So my thought with Clyde Edwards-Helaire specifically is they're not using him the way they use Damian. Like, if you go and look at, like, the dots, right? You go pull up the dots, or if you look at their charts on Next Gen Stats, you'll see that they're using Clyde Edwards-Helaire. What's a good comp? Like, they're using him like he is Chris Carson, and they should. If they were using him like Damian Williams, and there's been a couple times, like for example, they were the Mecole Hardman touchdown drive on Monday night against the Patriots. They ran him behind the tackles twice, and then they started passing the ball, and then they got to the 30, and they did a really cool pitch play, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire ran for 20 yards and like made a safety miss and looked great. It's extremely, extremely frustrating to see them use a running back like a battering ram when they like, it's just like, what's the point? Like, I just don't get what's going on here.
Yeah. And even if it was working better, it's still like the alternative is to let Patrick Mahomes pass the ball, which is a really great alternative. So like every time you're calling a run play, you're not allowing for that to happen. I guess maybe like if I were a Chiefs fan, I would say like the optimistic view is that they know that they don't really have to try super hard in most games against most teams. So they're just like, they know that they just have to win. If they get the number one seed, they just have to win their 2 home playoff games and then they're off to the Super Bowl. So We saw them play the Ravens and dismantle them. Next week is actually a really big game against the Bills. So it wouldn't surprise me if they came out and actually tried to be aggressive and score against the Bills, because that's really their only other competition left in the AFC. But if they come out and run the ball a lot against the Bills, then that's when I...
So that is, you're right. That is the hope. And I don't, I'm very cautious of being like, what does Andy Reid know? Like, why is he doing this? Because like, again, I think it certainly is possible that, you know, they're just figuring things out, right? That like eventually this is all going to wrap up, and it's going to have looked stupid to, you know, even be concerned about the Kansas City Chiefs. Cause by the way, after the Chargers game, people were concerned. Like people and I actually, if I had to guess, I think that probably they just didn't really care about that Chargers game. That like, yeah. they were like, whatever, we can get out of here with this overtime win, we can scrap. But the game we really need to win for seeding purposes is the game next week against the Ravens.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that's like yesterday's game and their next game. So they're playing against Brandon Hoyer, and they probably never really felt like they were going to lose, and they never, like, it wasn't even a great game for Mahomes, but they were never in danger of losing. And then they know that after last night's game, they're going to have a long week of rest. Or wait, is it? Yeah, because they're playing, they have a bye, and then they're playing the Bills, I think is how it's working.
Yeah, I believe that's how that works. I can look right here. Games and schedule. Yeah, so they play. They got the Patriots way. They play the Raiders in Week 5. So my guess is actually for fantasy purposes, my guess is this Raiders Chiefs game actually like ends up being terrible. That the Chiefs go super conservative. They run Clyde Edwards-Helaire a bunch. They probably use Darrell Williams and Darwin in that game if they can get away with it. And that's like a 21-17 game, because they really want to be ready to play the Bills on that Thursday night.
Yeah, and that Chiefs-Bills game might be the most important game in the AFC for the rest of the season. Like they're both undefeated. They both look really good. And the Chiefs already have the convincing win against the Ravens under their belt. So I don't think the NFL was expecting the Bills to be this good when they made the schedule, but they definitely lucked out that this is going to be a primetime game, and I think it could just be an awesome game. So I'm very excited for it.
Yeah. So let's I actually want to talk about our Ravens, because like I don't root for the Ravens, but like they're Twitter's team, and they are 3-1. They have the loss to the Chiefs, where they are non-competitive, right? So they end up scoring 16 points in that game, but you know it's or 20 points in that game actually, but it's not like it was a convincing performance or anything. What do you make of it from a high level? Like, or is this just kind of Lamar regression stuff? Are you like, I'm kind of concerned, you know, about the decision making, but where are you coming at it with our Ravens?
So it's really hard to know what to make of them, because they played 4 games, they've won 3 games by at least 2 touchdowns, and they got smoked by the one team that they need to be able to compete with once the playoffs start. So on the one hand, it's like, it makes me a little bit nervous to read into these small sample things, like people saying Lamar, he's not a good quarterback at coming back because we haven't seen him do it in the past. But like the number of times he's actually been asked to do it, yeah, it hasn't looked great when he's done it, but it's also been like just a handful of games. So like there's that on the one hand, but then there's also like, if the Ravens got into a shootout in the playoffs with the Chiefs, it's so hard to imagine them being able to keep up, just because the Chiefs offense, like when the Chiefs offense is clicking, like nobody can keep up with them.
Yeah, right? No one can. It's an unreasonable thing to even like ask of a team, I think.
And the kind of the other strange thing is Harbaugh being so conservative against the Chiefs. So in that opening drive they had, I think it was like a 4th-and-3, and
yes,
they kicked the field goal, and you're not going to beat the Chiefs with field goals. So it was kind of a surprising thing to see. So I'm hoping, like, if they play again, it'll be in a long time, and for the Ravens' sake, I'm hoping that they'll have figured more things out by then. But that game did not go exactly how expected.
I don't even really want to admit this somewhere where it could come back to haunt me, but I actually like, I am a little worried about Lamar like I thought after week one, where he had some really strong throws to Willie Snead, was just like hitting Marquise Brown in stride on, you know, basically every time. Like I actually am worried about Lamar's lack of development as a passer, because long term, their style of football really works and does really well a vast majority of the time. But you cannot be calling that many running plays down two touchdowns. Like it just mathematically doesn't make sense, because you don't leave yourself enough time on the clock. And Lamar, yeah, I mean, we've seen it now. The Chargers playoff game as a rookie, the Browns game in the regular season last year, the playoff game against the Tennessee Titans last year as well, and then the Chiefs game. The best word to describe the way that the Ravens offense looks when they're down 10 points is frantic, and it's not good.
Yep. Yeah, they just, like, it sounds silly to say, but like if that really is a thing, and their offense relies so much on the threat of running both from Lamar and their running backs, like they just can't get into a hole against teams as good as the Chiefs. And once they did last week, the game was just over basically.
Yeah. All right. The Buffalo Bills, do you buy it? Do you not buy it? Are you a Josh Allen truther still? I will just say right now, like I was just straight up wrong about Josh Allen. Like he did not look like a good college prospect to me, but also neither did Justin Herbert, and Justin Herbert looks fantastic. So what do I know? You know, like I think that there certainly is an element right now of maybe NFL evaluators do know something about quarterbacks that we don't know.
Yeah. So I think it's a hard conversation, because like one thing we can say that is true is quarterbacks with the statistical profile of Josh Allen in college, especially at a small school, their probability of succeeding in the NFL is very small. So everyone can agree on that, right? The question is taking the risk on somebody who does have all the physical tools but can't seem to complete a pass, is that a good risk? And after the first 2 years, it looked like Josh Allen still could not complete a pass. And then all of a sudden, in year three, he can. And the question is, like, where does that come from? How is that developed? Can it be predicted ahead of time? And those are questions that we'd have to ask the football people, because I just have no idea, like, how to even go about answering those questions. So I don't know if I want to give credit to, quote-unquote, Bills Mafia for predicting this, because every fan base of a team with a young quarterback who's struggling tells us that their quarterbacks are going to get
that better. Their quarterback is good.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Like the Bears did this with Trubisky. The Giants are doing this with, I can't even remember his name anymore, Daniel Jones. That's his name. And like every fan base is going to hang on to their quarterback until it's obvious that it's not going to happen anymore. And that's what Bills did. And yeah, Bills fans turned out to be right, but a lot of other fan bases have turned out to be wrong as well. So I think it's good for the NFL that Josh Allen seems to be good. He's an awesome player to watch. By all accounts, the Bills are a well-run organization and a well-coached team, and I've enjoyed watching them. And having Diggs on that team is also a lot of fun. So, I think the quote-unquote analytics people may have overstated the certainty that Josh Allen would ever develop. Because obviously he has developed, and good for him for putting in the work and doing that.
Let me tell you this though. They did not overstate how bad this guy was in college though. Yep. That was not made up at all. These are for people who don't know, these are Josh Allen's college stats. Okay. So he started for 2 years. He started 25 games. He threw for 5,000 yards total. He threw for 44 touchdowns total, 21 interceptions. And granted, you got to take his rushing numbers with a little grain of salt, because sacks are included in this, but he ran for 767 yards, 12 rushing touchdowns. So like basically he has just been a better NFL player than he was a college player. Like even when Josh Allen was bad, when Josh Allen was a bad rookie, when Josh Allen was an inaccurate sophomore player, he was averaging more yards per attempt as a bad NFL player than he was as a good theoretical player at Wyoming University. Like, it people were not making up that he was bad.
Yeah, and his rookie season too. So I'm looking at, like, for example, his completion percentage over expected. The only player worse than him in his rookie season was Josh Rosen, who hasn't really played much since then.
Rest in peace, bud.
Yeah, like, Allen was worse than Blake Bortles, Joe Flacco, Andy Dalton, Case Keenum, like, Eli Manning. All, like, he was worse at completing passes than all those players. So I don't think it was unreasonable to be skeptical about him going forward. And yeah, he improved into a second year, but growth often isn't linear, and improving from one year to the next doesn't guarantee improvement into the third year. Again, Allen has defied all that and has indeed improved into his third year. So good for him. And I'm sure the Bills fan base is enjoying.
So are you respecting the Bills as a potential Super Bowl contender? Because there are still people in the football analytics world that are like, look, man, it's a nice story, but it's not happening for them. I disagree with that. I think that Josh Allen, like, I don't think he's a stud, maybe. Like, I don't think he's Mahomes or Lamar or anything like that, but I think he is really good. And I think that what the lesson of Josh Allen is to me is it is a lesson in, if you build your entire team around your quarterback skill set, you are going to do so much better than if you just throw the quarterback in and you're like, you know what, good luck. Like, I to me, that is the lesson.
Yeah, the Bills have a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. And, like, coming into the season, people were saying, if Josh Allen can just be okay, then the Bills could be contenders. And he's been, obviously, he's been way better than okay. But even if he comes back to earth a little bit, I think that's still a really good team. And honestly, there's not that much competition in the conference. There's the Chiefs and the Ravens. And beyond that, like, how many other teams are, like, definitively good? Maybe Pittsburgh. Maybe, like, the Colts or Titans, but they're...
Pittsburgh fans would tell you they could contend to be the best team.
Yeah, and I haven't seen enough Pittsburgh to really have an opinion there. but yeah, the Bills are absolutely in the race, and again, have that the big game against the Chiefs coming up, and I think that game could be telling for both.
So pretty much every team we just discussed, except for the Seahawks, was an AFC team. I mean, how boring is the NFC, right? Like, to me, it's the Seahawks and the Packers. I mean, everyone in the NFC East is terrible. The Bears suck. This is actually a weird one where I feel like analytics people are much more likely to be into the Tampa Bay Buccaneers than, like, the tape watchers or whatever, because, I mean, like, and I don't consider myself, like, a strict analytics person, and I do watch a lot of football, and I think the Buccaneers suck. I don't think that they are, like, I don't think they're a candidate to win the Super Bowl at all. I think that they are, you know, if they play Seattle, or even if they play this version of Green Bay, I think they'll get blown out. But you might have a different perspective because the Buccaneers have played well against everyone, really, except for the Saints. So let's go there. What are your thoughts on the Buccaneers as a very strict analytics person?
Yeah, so I think they're hard because they're integrating a new quarterback, and one of the reasons people are high on them going into the season is the weapons that Brady would have, and neither one of them has been healthy the whole time.
Yeah, they've been injured like they've alternated weeks.
The Buccaneers that we're seeing now could be pretty different than what we saw at the end of the season, and especially, like, the week one against the Saints. Yeah, they lost and didn't look great, but I'm not sure how much we can learn from that game.
Yeah, I mean, that could just be totally random at the end. Like, that could just be like the Saints are terrible, the Buccaneers are good, and that was just a super random occurrence.
Yeah, so it wouldn't surprise me if they're kind of in the mix at the end. The other team that I'll throw in there is the Rams, who have been a lot better than I think anybody expected, but their offense is, like, good and fun again. And it's, like, people were so down on them. I saw people predicting that they would get the number one pick in the draft and things like that. And, like, they didn't look great last year. They lost a bunch of players, but I think McVay is still really good. And if Goff gets pass protection that he trusts, then McVay can do enough to get that offense going. And their only loss is to the Bills in a pretty close game, and otherwise they've looked pretty good.
So I actually agreed with this take for fantasy football, where like people were not as interested in Kupp and Woods. People were not as interested in the running backs. And I thought that that was stupid from like a, will this offense be able to produce good fantasy football numbers? Like I was like, no way, like it's just not right. But from a, can this team win playoff games perspective, I actually think it's right, because McVay to me has not shown the ability to adjust to what other defensive coordinators change on him in season, right? And we have like a pretty large sample of, as defensive coordinators start to specifically game plan for McVay's offenses, like he continues to fail. And maybe again, you would have a different perspective on that and just be like, look, you know, it was a small sample or whatever. I believe in Sean McVay like 80% of the way, I think is kind of how I would explain it.
Yeah. So I definitely agree with you there. And I think the one exception is that Seattle's defense has shown absolutely
they are so bad.
McVay. Yeah. Well, it's not just that they're bad this year. It's that they are always bad against the Rams. Like even last year, the Seahawks couldn't stop the Rams, and the Rams are a lot better this year. So the combination of the bad Seahawks defense and the Rams looking better, like if they met in the playoffs, I don't think the Seahawks will have figured out the Rams by then. They still play twice this year, and maybe I'll look dumb and the Seahawks will find some way to deal with all of McVay's stuff. But if the Rams played the Seahawks, I don't think the Seahawks defense would scare me there. The Packers defense isn't that scary. So it's really just teams like the 49ers or maybe the Saints or Bucks, like those types of teams actually have like the personnel and perhaps coaching to slow down the Rams. But it's a question mark of who they actually end up facing in the playoffs, assuming that they make it there. And I would guess that they would.
All right. We gotta talk about it. Aaron Rodgers, man. What do we got? My opinion is, I think that Robert Tonyan, Aaron Jones are like actually solid. The pass blocking has been very good, and LaFleur has figured a lot of things out that is uniquely good for the current situation of the NFL. But I don't buy that Aaron Rodgers is capital A, capital R Aaron Rodgers again. But I think he's like, now he's again like the eighth best quarterback in football.
Yeah, so I think this is kind of a similar discussion as Josh Allen in a different way. This is probably going to upset people, but like Rodgers just missed a lot of throws and a lot of open receivers in the past few years. And like you could watch the games and watch the tape and see open receivers that Rodgers, for whatever reason, didn't throw to, or open receivers that he just missed. And
yeah, and he's never completed, like it's never been his fault when he's thrown an incomplete pass to Marquez Valdes-Scantling, ever. Never been his fault.
Yeah, so, and those, like, he threw away so many plays by either taking sacks or not taking whoever was open and having plays that ended in throwaways, or, like, just, like, not playing in the structure of the offense, and he's not doing that anymore. So, credit to him for, like, throwing to open receivers when they're open and not missing throws, and I don't know how we could have predicted this ahead of time. Like, the numbers for the past five-ish seasons weren't great, and this is where the Josh Allen discussion comes in, is how does a player who wasn't playing very good all of a sudden start playing a lot better? And that's a really hard question for us on the outside.
Well, I mean, I guess the answer for Rodgers would be he always had this ability to some degree, and it just wasn't happening for, yep, you know, X, Y, or Z, and now it's happening. And I guess what's frustrating is people who were saying that he was playing really well when he wasn't are like taking undeserved victory laps. And it's like, yep, you know, whatever. Why like that? Don't do that.
Or people saying like, see, I told you all along that
Rodgers was the best.
Or like his supporting cast was holding him back. Okay, last night, what was his supporting cast? Like if he's playing well, he can elevate whoever is around him. So like the idea that he's been held back by Davante Adams the past 5 years. Like, it just doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, Davante Adams is maybe the answer is that Davante Adams is maybe a little bit overrated as a difference-making NFL player. I could buy that. I could buy if someone told me, Davante Adams is like a B+ NFL wide receiver instead of an A+. Like, I could buy that.
So I think Adams is very good, but a possible explanation that makes sense is that when Adams isn't there, then Rodgers knows he doesn't have a safety blanket and he's more willing to just like run whatever play is called and throw to whatever receiver is open. And we saw Adams was out last year for, I think, 4 games, and that was like Rodgers' best stretch of the season. And I'm not saying that like the Packers offense is better for not having Adams out there, but maybe there's like some way in which Rodgers is playing more free or something. Although this year, before Adams got hurt, Rodgers was also playing great. So I think there's also.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Do you have any takes on who wins the NFC East? I mean, do it like, I'm sort of the opinion that like the Dallas Cowboys are just going to shoot themselves in the foot forever, just no matter what happens. Like, it is just their lot in life to I think in the Falcons game they fumbled 4 times. It's just like, yep. What are you guys even doing out there? Like, what is the point of this is all so stupid.
Yeah, I think like if I had a gun to my head and had to choose, I think I would just bet on the talent of Dak and the receivers to just kind of fix everything else that is around them. And that's not to say they're blameless for what's happened. Like, Dak has fumbled, and pretty sure there's been fumbles on completed passes too. Like, it's definitely been a team effort in their start, but like watching the Eagles, even though they beat the 49ers, like there's not a lot to be impressed by with Wentz's play, especially. I know they're in first place and the Cowboys haven't looked great, but I think that would be my bet still. In something that might.
The 49ers to me look like one of the all-time, you had one good Super Bowl run and you're never getting back there with this combination of head coach or quarterback ever again. Because I think that like if you look at how they sustained their success, it's like different than what every other team in the NFL that's really successful is doing, right? Like they're trying to run the ball like 40 times a game. And I mean, you saw, I guess, on what was it, Sunday Night Football, when Kittle had the 15 targets. Like, when they get into the foxhole, they realize what they need to do, but that's not their style of play, I guess, per se.
Yeah, I'm trying not to be too harsh on them because they're playing with a backup quarterback, and yeah, Shanahan's good.
Their whole team is hurt. Team is hurt.
Yeah, Shanahan's good, and people say that, like, he minimizes the quarterback, which is fine, but like Jimmy G isn't making like the catastrophic bad mistakes that Mullins was making against the Eagles. So it should be a little bit better, but still they're like, they have a stretch this year. So they play the Dolphins on Sunday. And then after that, they play Rams, Patriots, Seahawks, Packers, Saints, Rams, Bills. So like, that is just an insane stretch. And if they don't start getting guys back, then like, it's hard to see them coming out of that with any, like, optimism for winning the division.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess in terms of that division, like, what an absolute bummer that the Cardinals look like the exact same team from last year. I was so optimistic for 2 weeks, and then it just turns out that they're just the same exact team. It's a really big bummer.
It's unfortunate because like Kyler's awesome and I want him to succeed. And like, there's definitely optimism that getting Hopkins would really help their offense, but losing back to back to the Lions and the Panthers is not a good sign. In this division, there's just like not that much wiggle room. So like, they still have 2 games coming against the Seahawks and 2 games coming against the Rams. So like, good luck with that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the answer is they're probably just not going to win those games. Like that. I don't even know. If this is how they continue to do things on offense, you know, I don't expect them to be particularly competitive. One of the things I wanted to touch on with you though was, overall, it does seem like there is a clear have and have nots existing as it pertains to analytics now. Like the teams that are not routinely going for it on fourth down, you know, the teams that are for the most part, you know, teams that are very run heavy on like second and long situations, like these teams are kind of getting left behind. Like we saw Bill O'Brien get fired. We've, you know, the Vikings are getting crushed. The Lions are getting crushed. You know, the Giants that with the Joe Judge experiment, they are getting crushed. Like it's mostly just bad news. I guess the one team, I guess the Titans seem okay, but they're actually more pass heavy even. And the Browns are 3-1 despite playing, you know, that very odd style of football. But I kind of expect that to fade as the season goes on as well.
Yeah. With the Browns are one of those teams where, like, if you're running as successfully as they are, or at least against the Cowboys last week, then, like, fine, go crazy, run the ball. Like, no one's going to tell you that that's a bad idea. It's when you're running a lot and you're not very good at it, then, like, the nerds will come make fun of you. And
yeah, I mean, I think my point though is like the nerds have ruined football. Like it's already there. Like the people complaining about like, you know, it turning into baseball or whatever, like it's already there. Like the idea that teams are not actively aware of this stuff happening is gone. Yep. Like it's already here. Like we are seeing it.
Yeah. And there's like almost the vast majority of teams have some like analytics staffer. Most of them have like three at least. The Browns, for example, hired a ton of people over the offseason. So, like, the teams are actively interested in this stuff. They're hiring people to do sophisticated technical stuff with player tracking data, which is, like, it's not easy to do. Like, it's very high-volume, big, like, quote-unquote big data stuff that you need specialized people to do. And, like, teams are making this investment in this because they're afraid of being left behind. And like, there's no reason to expect this trend to not.
Yeah. Also, okay, this is how we should end. Why don't you just explain to people, because I certainly would not have understood this like a year ago, what happened with airyards.com and like all the stuff that people love, like, because I think that people really should understand like just how shitty and petty this was of the NFL to do.
Yeah, so in May, the NFL redesigned all their websites, so like everything that lives on NFL.com. And one of the things that lived there was this JSON feed, which is just basically like a way of formatting data that makes it easy for machines to read and then humans to be able to do stuff with it. So there used to be this this series of pages where if you knew the ID of a game, you could get all the information for the game, the play-by-play, all the stat IDs, which has like who the ball carrier was, who the tackler was, on pass plays, how many air yards it went, like all the stuff that people take for granted when we like do data involved stuff using NFL data. And then in May, it just disappeared with no warning or announcement or anything from the NFL. So like NFL Scrapar, the package that the R package that people use to get data, and there's also a Python package called NFL Game, I want to say, and the latter is what powered Josh's site airyards.com. Like all that stuff relied on that data, and it was gone all of a sudden. So we kind of poked around for a very long time and looked for an alternate source for data, which we have. So that's why you still see play-by-play stuff out there. But like, for example, Josh's Air Yards was powered by a database that relied on this Python package that relied on the NFL website that is now gone. So Josh is in the very tedious process of converting all that to the new data source, which is why Air Yards isn't back yet, but I think it will be at some point. But yeah, it's kind of annoying how little the NFL cares about like the little commoners like us who aren't paying for the data. But on the other hand, I guess they don't really have any strong incentive to. So it just like creates all these headaches.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing is like basketball would never do this, right? Like, I guess this is like such a baseball move, really. It's yeah, the best way to explain it. Like, why do you not want people to be following your sport? Like, why are you trying to keep data away? I guess the NFL's answer would be what? That they would like, they want it's like a competitive advantage thing.
I would guess that they would say like, some people pay us for access to the data, and if you want the data, then you can pay for it. And we don't want, we're just like public hobbyists, so we're not going to pay for it.
Yeah, that's annoying. All right, there we go. Great conversation, Ben. Tell people about all the stuff you have going on over at The Athletic, and you got a promo code for them to sign up with?
I don't, but I've seen some promos going for, like, if you sign up, it's for $1 a month or something, which is the lowest I've ever seen it. So look around on Twitter, and I think that's floating out there. But I'm Ben B. Baldwin on Twitter. My stuff is at The Athletic Seattle, and you can read about how the nerds were right about letting Russell Wilson cook, which is out today. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Everyone, go follow Ben on Twitter. Go read his stuff. Subscribe to The Athletic. It's a great website. Get a lot of good fantasy football nuggets and stuff from there. So well worth it. And we'll be back next week.
Build digital-first customer relationships with Salesforce Digital 360. Connect every marketing, commerce, and digital experience on a single platform. Innovate fast with easy-to-launch sites, campaigns, and apps. That's more relationships, more revenue, more return, and more success. Salesforce Digital 360. Hear from our customers at sfdc.co/digital360.